everyone, and welcome to Memcast. I'm Rachel and I'll be your host today. In today's episode, I'm going to be welcoming Dr. Patience Ahilawa, who's a respiratory consultant here at Nottingham University Hospitals. Today we're going to be talking about inhalers, which will span both asthma and COPD management. We've also had some really good questions from the audience today, so we're going to try and include these as we go along. So hi Patience, thanks for joining us today on Memcast.
Thanks Rachel, thanks for the invite.
So we're going to start today with one of the questions from our Instagram page at mem.cast. So Can you start off by explaining the different types of inhalers for us, giving us some examples and how they actually work?
Right. So we have the short-acting beta agonists, which many people are familiar with. So a common example of that would be salbutamol, and you've got different brand names. So Ventolin, Salamol, for example. You also have terbutaline, Bricanyl. Then you've got your short-acting antimuscarinic, which would be ipratropium bromide, Atrovent, which people are more familiar with. You've got your long-acting beta agonist, so that's salmeterol, formoterol, indacaterol. You've got vilanterol, olodaterol, so different types. And you've got your long-acting antimuscarinic, which is most commonly tiotropium bromide. You've also got aclidinium and glycopyrronium bromide and umeclidinium, so it just depends on which company. You have your inhaled corticosteroids, which you call ICS, and you could have the ICS inhaler as a standalone or as a combination. And commonly you have budesonide, beclometasone, cyclesonide, which is Alvesco, fluticasone, mometasone, and different steroid potency depending on which inhaled steroid we're talking about. And you then have the combination inhalers, where you have a LABA/LAMA combination inhaler. Some common examples of that would be things like Anoro Ellipta, for example, Ultibro, Duaclair, Spioto, and they would contain different combination of a LABA or LAMA. And you've got your ICS LABA, which many people are also familiar with, things like Seretide, Serdupla, Symbicort, Duoresp. You've got Foster, you've got Flutiform. And finally, you've got the triple combination inhalers, where you've got three medications in one canister or in one inhaled device, and that would be your ICS, LABA, and LAMA. And the common ones would be Trimbo, Trelegy, Trixeo. I think there's a new inhaler called Enerzair, which is a triple combination dry powder inhaler, which I believe is licensed for adult asthma. But I would recommend people check their local formularies to see if that is listed as one of the available inhalers. And this applies to all inhalers, really. Check your local formulary, because they may have certain inhalers that they prefer to use locally.
So going back to how these drugs work, how are SABAs actually helping people?
So the SABAs would help patients with bronchodilation. They are quick acting, similar with the SAMAs, but as the name implies, they are short acting medications. One of the difficulties we have in terms of asthma management, particularly in the UK, is we have a problem with SABA overuse, where patients are using a lot of salbutamol inhalers, but may not necessarily be taking their ICS containing inhaler, whichever form that comes in, as appropriate. So we are trying to educate patients on the importance of making sure that if they've got a diagnosis of asthma for COPD, that may not always be the case. They may not always need an inhaled corticosteroid, but if they've got a diagnosis of asthma, that it's important to make sure they take their inhaled steroid, which is the preventer medication, and that would help to make sure that the inflammation in the airways is also treated rather than the bronchodilator in isolation.
So I guess that actually leads us on quite nicely to talk about the use of these inhalers in asthma and COPD. Mm-hmm. And there's been some changes to both of those treatment regimes recently. So if we start with asthma, could you just talk us through that change in that shift from the SABA use into a newer way of managing asthma?
Yeah. So for asthma, the key message remains that anyone who has a confirmed or even a suspected diagnosis of asthma should not be put on a SABA inhaler alone, neither should they be put on a LABA inhaler alone. Someone with an asthma diagnosis has to have an inhaled corticosteroid treatment. Currently, at the time of this podcast, PTS and NICE are working on an updated guideline, so I wouldn't want to preempt what would be in that guideline. But we have the GINA strategy, which is the Global Initiative for Asthma, and GINA have been very clear and have proposed almost like a two-track pathway where the preference really is for patients to be on an ICS formoterol containing inhaler. Mm-hmm. And they could either start this as a as needed anti-inflammatory reliever, which the acronym for that is AIR, A-I-R, where the patient takes their ICS formoterol containing inhaler as and when they want to. The flip side to that would be that we don't want to advise patients with asthma to only use their inhalers as and when, but we do have patients who do not have a lot of symptoms, and their symptoms might be seasonal or quite variable, and if that is something that would help them be adherent, if they're taking an inhaler, at least we make sure then it's an ICS containing inhaler as opposed to SABA monotherapy. So that is one option. And if the patient then has more regular symptoms, they could then move on to what we call maintenance and reliever therapy. But once again, they have the same inhaler, which they then use once or twice a day, and then they have their as-needed doses to use in between, depending on their symptoms. And what you want is a situation where the patient stays on the same inhaler, but the amount of ICS inhaled corticosteroids they are taking will then gradually increase from a very low dose to maybe a moderate or a high dose over time, depending on how their symptoms progress. And as you move up the ladder, then additional treatments can be added, such as things like Montelukast, for example. And in patients, with my personal practice, in patients who have evidence of airflow obstruction on their spirometry, I would add a LAMA inhaler to help them with symptom management. And as you know, we have a severe asthma service here at Nottingham, and people come to us for assessments for consideration of biologic treatment if all other therapies has failed to control their asthma, despite making sure that their adherence is accurate and their inhaler technique has been checked and corrected as much as possible. So that is one of the tracks that GINA has proposed. The second would be what is common practice in a lot of patients in primary care, where they would have their preventer inhaler and they would have a separate SABA inhaler. And the key message from GINA for people on that track is, if a patient has to have a SABA inhaler for whatever reason, they should make sure that they've also had their ICS containing inhaler. So the main message for asthma management is patients should not be treated on SABA alone. They should have an ICS containing inhaler, and as their treatment progresses or as their symptom progresses and treatment requirement increases, it's helpful to have a single ICS formoterol inhaler where possible, so that they have one technique to master and that overall would increase their adherence. Mm. And there is evidence that patients on an ICS formoterol containing inhaler have less risk of exacerbation compared to patients who are on a separate ICS and a SABA inhaler as their reliever. And overall, your ICS formoterol patients may actually have less total inhaled steroid use compared to those who are on a fixed dose.
Mm. And our listeners might have heard of that maintenance and reliever therapy, mm-hmm. being termed MART,
yes.
therapy. So that's just something for you guys to think about when you're next on your admission unit.
Yes, and if I may, one of the important things to explain to patients is how many doses to take for their fixed dose, and how many additional puffs they can take if they have increased symptoms. And it depends on which ICS formoterol containing inhaler that would determine what the maximum dose is. So for example, For Foster 100/6, the maximum dose is 8 puffs in a 24-hour period, whereas for Symbicort 100/6 or Symbicort 200/6, the maximum dose would be 12 puffs in a 24-hour period. But the key message is to emphasize to patients that typically they shouldn't be needing the maximum dose every day. If you are on a Foster inhaler and you're needing to use 8 puffs on a daily basis, you need to seek early medical help. Likewise, if you're on Symbicort MART and you're needing 8 puffs, you should be getting help at around 8 puffs rather than waiting till you get to that 12 maximum. So patients should be informed to come back down to their maintenance dose once their symptoms are controlled. So that's an important message to get across for MART. So another thing that's important to be mindful of for patients on MART is that MART is not actually licensed for COPD. It's a treatment that's licensed for patients with asthma. Also, the additional puffs, like I've said, up to 8 puffs for Foster or up to 12 puffs for Symbicort, that is not licensed for the higher strength. So Foster 200/6 or Symbicort 400/12. There are other MART inhalers apart from this, so like Lorfobec, for example, or Fobumix. Patients should not be on MART when they're on the highest strength, because we don't want 12 puffs of Symbicort 400.
That's a lot of steroids.
Yeah, that's a lot of inhaled steroids, and that individual should definitely seek help. So it's important when giving advice on MART to make it clear that it's not all formoterol containing inhalers. There are specific ones that are licensed for MART, and they can't just use MART for high dose inhaled ICS formoterol.
Okay.
Inhalers.
Yeah. So we'll switch tack now and just talk a little bit more about COPD.
Mm-hmm.
So the GOLD criteria, again, have changed recently to recategorize the classes of people presenting with COPD, which is based on, you know, exacerbations and symptoms.
Yeah.
Can you talk us a little bit more about that and the knock-on effects that that's had on inhaler prescribing initially?
Okay, so the previous GOLD classifications has group A, B, C, and D. These categories are based on not just the extent of their symptoms, but also on the frequency and severity of exacerbations. In the more recent GOLD 2023 guidelines, groups C and D have now been merged into a single group, which is group E. And a good way to remember that is E for exacerbations. And the reason this has been done according to GOLD is to emphasize really the importance of exacerbations and the fact that we know that the more frequent exacerbations patients have, they have a decline in lung function. These exacerbations also contribute to the disease burden for the patient, carries a mortality risk, especially if it's an exacerbation that's severe enough to land them in hospital. And we are increasingly trying to raise awareness about the cardiovascular comorbidities also that patients with COPD experience. So that's the key change. For those of us in secondary care, it really doesn't change what we do in a significant way, because most of the patients that we see who are being admitted with an exacerbation, more often than not, are already on at least a LABA/LAMA or sometimes on a triple combination inhaler. There has been some criticisms of the updated guidance that lumping group C and D into group E may lead to overtreatment. So if we go through the recommendations, patients in group A should be treated with a bronchodilator, whereas patients in group B should ideally have a LABA/LAMA combination inhaler. And then patients in group E should either have a LABA/LAMA combination inhaler or could be considered for triple combination inhaler, depending on exacerbation frequency and their blood eosinophil levels. Over time, some more research is needed to see what the impact of this is in clinical practice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that triple inhaler, just to clarify, is a LABA, LAMA and ICS combination inhaler.
Yes, and that can either be in a single inhaler with those three drug components in it, or it could be as two separate inhalers where the patient has an ICS LABA inhaler and then might have a separate LAMA inhaler in two devices. But obviously, if these patients have two separate devices, then you would have to make sure that their education on the individual devices is appropriate. And often, patients would have a separate SAMA, like a salbutamol inhaler. So you find three different inhalers, some of which may be dry powder, some of which may be soft mist inhalers, others metered dose inhaler. So it's helpful to make sure the patient knows what they're doing with their inhalers, and where possible, stick to the same type of device, or at the very least, the same type of inhaler medication, either dry or metered dose, for consistency.
So I guess there's two points for us to explore there. If they're on separate inhalers with different mechanisms and different inhaler techniques, and inhaler technique is a whole other topic that we're not going to have chance to get into today, but if people are listening, they can check out the Right Breathe app, which is
absolutely
fantastic for both your own personal education of inhaler technique, but also to show and help your patients.
Yeah, I find the videos very helpful, and also the Asthma Lung UK website, they have videos on there on how to use different inhalers, so very helpful to signpost staff members and patients too.
Yeah, so if they're on these different inhaler types with different mechanisms, and it could make sense to swap to a combination inhaler to try and improve their compliance and like simplify that schedule. But if they're already on a combination inhaler like a LABA, LAMA, ICS, like Trimbo, and it's not controlling their symptoms well enough, what would be your approach? Is it worth switching them to another inhaler? How would you work through that?
So it can be a difficult situation to manage, because technically they are on the strongest combination inhaler that we have available. My approach really is to start from the beginning. First of all, is to look at the device and check to see if they are able to use the device. So I actually start with device first, and then once I or our specialist nurses can give advice on the best device for that patient, then I work the other way around. I then decide, do I want a triple combination, or do I want an ICS LABA, or do I want a separate LAMA? I then try and find the drug that is available in that device and then prescribe that way. Because inhalers are different compared to medications, if the device or the technique is not right, then they might as well not be using the medication, because it's not getting to the right parts of the body. So that's what I do. I check the device. If I'm happy that the device is appropriate for the patient, for example, the dry powder inhalers, making sure the patient has adequate inspiratory flow to actually suck up the medication and inhale the medication into their lungs, and I'm happy with that, then I go back to what is driving the symptoms. The simple things, the non-pharmacological things, can often sometimes be forgotten. Are they smoking? And have they stopped smoking? Are they vaping? Although vaping is a harm reduction strategy, some people can still get irritation to their lungs and increase coughing from vaping. So although I'd rather they vape than smoke, if they can give up the vaping eventually, that would be one less irritant to the lungs. Have they had pulmonary rehabilitation, for example? And if so, has it been in the last 1 to 2 years? It may be that they're due for recall to pulmonary rehab, and I could re-refer them. Are they having infective exacerbations? Have they had a recent sputum culture? And have we looked for other organisms apart from your routine MCNS? So I usually have a low threshold for adding an AFB, acid fast bacilli, if that hasn't been done recently, just to make sure we're not missing something else, like a non-tuberculous mycobacteria that may be the reason why they're exacerbating. Have they ever grown Pseudomonas previously? And could it be that they may have become colonized or recolonized with Pseudomonas, and we may need different antibiotic strategy to try and treat that? And other things that I would consider is whether they need things like azithromycin prophylaxis to try and control their exacerbation frequency. obviously we want them to be non-smokers because the azithromycin is more likely to work, and then do other screening tests to make sure that there are no contraindications. And then there's other medications like roflumilast, which we would want to think about if the FEV1 is less than 50%, for example, but there are GI side effects that would need to be factored in, and also other problems like weight loss. So it may not be appropriate for someone who's already underweight. So these are the host of factors that I would consider, but I would then really focus on the non-pharmacological things. And COPD nurses are very good in providing support, breathing management technique, just to help the patients cope a bit better. I have a very, very high threshold for giving nebulizers at home. I would consider for COPD, or less so for asthma, and perhaps for some COPD patients, a select few, it may be a nebulizer at home might help them to control their symptoms and prevent frequent hospitalizations, but it's not something that I would do routinely for COPD.
So really there's a lot to think about before reaching for a different inhaler.
Yes, there is a lot of things to consider. But to answer your question in the other way, in terms of if after doing all of these things, they don't feel that their triple combination inhaler is helping, then I would discuss with the patient and seek their views as to whether they want that triple inhaler uncoupled, which is the phrase I use, into an ICS LABA inhaler on one hand and a separate LAMA inhaler. Some people simply like having three inhalers, their ICS LABA, their LAMA, and their SAMA inhaler, and they want to have something to use if they're struggling with symptoms, and they may not be happy with just a once-a-day inhaler, like Trelegy, for example, which is a dry powder inhaler. Patients find it beneficial, but some people feel like they want something else later in the evening when they feel like their symptoms are coming back up. So I would tailor my approach to the individual patient's needs, discuss the options, and then they choose what they prefer. And you also have to factor in costs. So that's a big factor for some people, because these inhalers are not cheap. The cost does add up. Mm. And some people, for cost reasons, just want one inhaler. It makes things very simple for them in terms of adherence and cost.
Okay, so when we're thinking about uncoupling that inhaler, there's some other options for how we can split the inhaler, isn't there?
Yeah, that's correct, Rachel. So when we think about patients with COPD in particular, it's important to consider if the ICS aspect of the inhaler is still clinically indicated. So it may be that when the triple inhaler is uncoupled, it may be better for that patient to go on the LABA/LAMA inhaler. For example, if they have not noticed any benefits at all from being escalated to a triple combination inhaler, or if they have had other side effects from the ICS, such as recurrent pneumonias, for example, or oral thrush. If we don't think the ICS is beneficial for patients with COPD, then you could uncouple that way and just simply take out the inhaled steroid element. But of course, for patients with asthma, you need to make sure that they have an inhaled corticosteroid, as we've mentioned. Another point that's also relevant with regards to triple combination inhalers, particularly for asthma, if a patient is on a high-dose ICS LABA inhaler and you decide you want to add on a LAMA and you want to put that patient on a triple combination inhaler, it's very important to be aware that not all triple combination inhalers are high dose strength in terms of the inhaled steroid component. So for example, if you have a patient with asthma who's on high dose Relva, so Relva 184/22, and you decide you want to put that patient on a triple combination inhaler, if you switch them from Relva Ellipta 184/22 to Trelegy Ellipta, same device, but actually Trelegy would give them medium dose ICS. So you're actually de-escalating their steroid treatment. If that's intentional, then fine. But just be mindful that it may be unintentional. So in those patients, if they're very happy with their Ellipta device and they don't wish for that to change, then it'll be better off just giving them a separate LAMA inhaler to add on, rather than unintentionally putting them on a medium dose ICS. Likewise, for patients on, say, Foster or Lofabec 200/6, which is the high dose,
If you put them on Trimbo as a triple combination inhaler, you need to then make sure that they go on the high dose Trimbo, which is the Trimbo 172/59, rather than Trimbo 87/59, which is the MDI or 88, which is the next inhaler. So that's an important point to be aware of.
And that's just going back to that initially starting with the inhaler device that we were talking about earlier.
Absolutely, making sure that the device is appropriate, because you might have patients with visual impairments and patients with arthritis that may not be able to use several devices. Most of the labalamas that we have are actually dry powder inhalers, but we have recently in the market Bevespi, which is an MDI labalama inhaler, and that's something that gives you additional options for your patients.
And I guess another kind of hot topic at the minute is climate change.
Absolutely.
And inhalers' contribution towards that. So can you tell us a little bit about that and why there's this shift to dry powder inhalers?
So the NHS has made a commitment really to be net zero, and there's all obviously a lot of areas through which we all contribute to greener gases and global warming in general. Inhalers form a small part, but it's not an insignificant part if you think about the volume of inhalers that we prescribe. So the advice really, or the preferred option, is for patients to be on dry powder inhalers, and that's because the dry powder inhalers do not have propellants. Patients would have to generate a breath and inhale the medication themselves. So the inspiratory effort is what releases the drug from the inhaler device, whereas a metered-dose inhaler has propellants, and those propellants then is what actually releases the drugs, and the drugs are inhaled. The propellants would contribute to CO2 emission and greenhouse gases, whereas the dry powder inhalers would have a lower carbon footprint. The most important thing when it comes to the greener agenda really is to make sure that we prescribe an inhaler that a patient can use. Some patients simply cannot tolerate a dry powder inhaler. It may be with their technique, and they feel like the dry powder sticks at the back of their throat or in their tongue, or they can taste the medication, but just some people cannot generate adequate inspiratory flow to release the medication. It's not ideal for everyone, but where possible, it should be considered. So my personal practice, if I'm prescribing a new inhaler for the first time, I would aim to go with a dry powder if possible. Ask our nurses to check the patient's technique on a dry powder device, and if our nurses are happy that they can use that device appropriately, then I'll prescribe. But if they don't think a dry powder would be appropriate for the patient, then I would prescribe a metered-dose device and advise them to use a spacer. So that's my personal approach. But yes, the greenest inhaler, as the phrase goes, is the one that a patient can use and will actually use. So we want to make sure we avoid forced switching, and we discuss any potential switches with the patient, but most importantly, check the device to make sure they can use the device.
Fabulous. Well, thank you so much for imparting your wisdom on us today. Mm-hmm. Patients, it's been much appreciated.
Pleasure.
And thanks everyone for joining us today on Memcast. We'll see you again next week.
Thank you. Bye everyone.